All right, a good Thursday afternoon, everybody. Nice to have you with us as we come to you just a little bit after 1 o'clock in the nation's capital and beyond. Well, maybe, depending on where you're listening on the Always Free and Live Odyssey app. It's not after 1 o'clock. Kind of depends whether you're listening A, live or on demand, or whether you're living, and listening in the Central Time Zone, Mountain Time Zone, or even out west where it's just after 10 o'clock. On Luka Doncic time. There you go with that. All right, before we get into the meat of the show, which will have something to do with Myles Garrett and then something to do with somebody else who plays a similar position to Myles Garrett and who might be a much, much better value and target for the Washington Commanders that I want to get your feedback on, I'm going to open up the show and tell you that coming up later on, not sure exactly what time yet because I recorded it last night. I sat down with him last night. We are going to be joined. Like this show, it may not be for everyone, baby. It may not be your standard cup of tea. We always say we don't do cookie cutter sports talk radio on this show. We are going to be graced by the voice of the megastar, L.A. Knight. Yeah! Last night at Capital One Arena, I sat down with L.A. Knight for about 8 minutes, got to meet him for the first time, got to chat with him, thanks to WWEPR who invited me out there, thanks to Ketsia at Wizards PR who coordinated it all. Right before he went on the court at halftime to fire up the crowd, which, to be honest with you, wasn't exactly the biggest crowd in the world. I mean, again, I don't know how much you would expect just from the standpoint it was a Wednesday night. It was not a big-time opponent, and it was sort of still a lingering snow night in which many people had the day off, so all of that kind of conspired and affected the crowd size. I don't know what the official number was, but the bottom line is it wasn't very large. But L.A. Knight was there doing his thing on the court during halftime, and he'll be doing his thing along with the rest of the World Wrestling Entertainment superstars tomorrow night, SmackDown, Capital One Arena. And then some will be migrating over to the Entertainment and Sports Arena, which I heard has a new corporate name. And L.A. Knight also heard that it had a new corporate name. And he confirmed that for us during the interview. So you'll hear that some of them will be on Saturday evening at Vengeance Day, the day after Valentine's Day, at the arena formerly known as the ESA. So WWE in town for a Friday night, SmackDown, Capital One Arena, 3-hour show on USA Network, and then also for Vengeance Day, a premium live event on Peacock, which is part of the NBC and NBC Universal family. So we will have L.A. Knight, who beat Logan Paul at SummerSlam in Cleveland, a show that I was at. Who also beat AJ Styles at WrestleMania last April in Philadelphia. Another show that I was at. I was actually at both of those shows. Both nights of WrestleMania and SummerSlam. Thanks to my guy, Lenny the Legend, who always takes care of his boy. Got to see L.A. Knight a couple of times in person, win big matches there, and then got to meet him in person last night at the Wizards game. Sat down with him for about 8 or so minutes, and you will hear a really cool interview. You will hear from the Hyattsville, Maryland native who's coming home to perform and entertain us all tomorrow night, Friday night, SmackDown at Capital One Arena. All right, so that's coming up later on in the show. I mentioned we're going to get into some Myles Garrett news and developments that's going to affect something else. But as part of last night, again, going to the Wizards game, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes on them. I got to run into so many good people, a couple of members of the organization. I'm not sure if they want their name mentioned or what have you. So I'll just leave it at that. A couple of really good security guards and guys that listen to the show. I appreciate all of them and all the nice words. Ran into Wes Hall, Of course, the television host of Monumental Sports Network does a tremendous job. You see him at pregame, halftime, postgame, on Monumental, right after or and during in each in between Wizards game. Ran into Chase Hughes, had a great conversation with him. He's part of the Monumental Sports Network family, and as well, you can hear him with Dave Johnson and Glenn Consor here on the Team 980 and the Wizards broadcast. So got to spend some good time with him and ran into General Manager Will Dawkins. Spent about 5 minutes chit-chatting it up with him. Now, listen, I can't tell you a lot of the things that we talked about because they're all off the record and all that stuff. But just know this. Just know this. The sense that I got from talking to all of these people is, and maybe it's pipe dreaming, I don't know. It's not as bad as people make it out to be, number one. Number two, the overwhelming sense that I got is they genuinely believe they are not tanking. They're not good, but they haven't quit. They haven't rolled over. They haven't played dead. And while they haven't always played good, and now they've lost four in a row, all four coming at home since a three-game road trip and road sweep, while they haven't played good enough to win these games, they've been in each and every one of them, right? They have. So while the results are still not what they want and what people that are around the team want, I will just say this. The perception that you hear on these two radio stations, that you hear in the cesspool, read in the cesspool of Twitter, Twix, X, what have you, what you see on message boards from keyboard knuckleheads, people with no stake in it, that's not how they operate there. And that's not the belief there. The only way to do this, the only way is to tank, is to quit, is to roll over and play dead. That's not how they believe. That's not what they believe. Now, is there an acknowledgement that obviously getting as many first-round picks and as many high picks as possible is the best way to go? The easiest way to go? Yeah, I would say it's the best way to go, not the only way to go, and not even the easiest way to go. Because I would tell you this, there is nothing easy. There is nothing easy about going through the first, 50 games I guess it's more than that now. Like they're 9-45, 54 games. There's nothing easy about winning less than 1/5 of that. There's nothing easy, right? It's not fun. They're not having fun. They're not enjoying this. You know, this isn't the Washington Generals where they try and make it look good and then ultimately they get clowned by the Harlem Globetrotters. I think it's the Washington Generals, not the Nationals. I think it's the Washington Generals. If that's still the opponent, I don't know. I haven't seen a Globetrotter show in a long time. But for those of you of a certain age, you certainly know that, right? There is no joy in Mudville when it comes to losing 4/5, more than 4/5, more than 80% of your games. They're not trying to do it on purpose, guys. They are not trying to lose on purpose. See, only in the cesspool of Twitter, and by extension, on these two radio stations, which is not as much of a cesspool, but is not exactly reality, only in that big swarming pot is there this notion that they are on purpose trying to not only lose, but trying to suck as bad as you can possibly suck. Only in those two areas does that exist. I guarantee you, I promise you, that does not exist in the walls of Monumental Basketball, in that locker room, on that coaching staff, and with people that actually are around that team all the time. Again, they are not good. There is nobody that will argue anything other than that. Okay, they are not good. You start there. But the notion that they are intentionally trying to lose, the notion that they are tanking games, the notion that they are trying purposely to get blown out, even though they haven't gotten blown out on this homestand, they've lost a couple of close games. Cleveland, who was the middle game? Then San Antonio, and then Indiana last night in overtime. I forget who the second game of the four, the quartet of four losses in a row was on. They are not trying to lose on purpose. They are not trying to get browbeat. They are not trying to get bitch slapped. They are not trying to do anything other than compete and win. That's it, period. And if you can't handle that, if you don't understand that, then you don't understand sports. As bad as the Commanders were last year under Ron Rivera, down the stretch, does anybody really and truthfully believe that guys like Jonathan Allen, just to use one, and Sam Cosmi, and whoever else you want to throw out from last year's team, not this past year's team, last year's team, does anybody really believe that any of those guys, or Ron Rivera, and Jack Del Rio was already fired, and the rest of the coaching staff, and Martin Mayhew, and at that point, Marty Herney, and all that. Does anybody truly believe they were trying to lose on purpose? Therefore, why would you believe in a sport that has a lottery, okay? The NFL does not have a lottery. If there's one sport now that you could say, hey, man, kind of lose on purpose here, like don't win. Try hard. Don't, like, the worst record gets rewarded. The second worst record gets rewarded. The NBA doesn't have that. The Detroit Pistons have finished with the worst record in the NBA the last 2 years. Do you know where they picked? With the most lottery balls, with the highest percentage? They picked fifth overall each of the last 2 years. Do you think there's one person with blood running through their veins in that building at Monumental Basketball? Do you think there's one person that isn't aware of that? That doesn't realize, hey man, we can't intentionally suck. We can't intentionally tank. You know why? Because there ain't no guarantee that we are getting the number one overall pick and therefore Cooper Flagg. And even if we don't get the number one pick, well, people say, well, that's all right. You'll get Ace Bailey from Rutgers. Guess what, guys? They were one number away, one like digit away from getting Victor Wembanyama 2 years ago on a 35-win team. One. Last year, they were one digit away from getting the number one overall pick, and they wound up with the number two overall pick. Right? You don't need to have the worst record. You don't need to tank. You don't need to lay down and get trampled over in order to get the number one pick and in order to rebuild your team. I was having a conversation with somebody last night, and we kind of touched on this earlier this week. Teams like the Milwaukee Bucks, the Denver Nuggets, you know, even the Oklahoma City Thunder, people think they tanked. They didn't tank. I mean, they made a really good trade for SGA. And when they struggled, they were winning, you know, 20-ish games. I'd have to go back and double-check all the numbers. But there hasn't been, I was talking to this person, there hadn't been one team that we could either one of us could identify that truly tanked. Truly tanked, not struggled, truly tanked, laid down and played dead and let people waltz all over them, that has recovered from that and gone on to win an NBA championship in any kind of reasonable time frame. Again, you say, well wait a second. Win a championship. The Philadelphia 76ers, and part of this was Josh Harris, tanked. They were horrible for a long stretch of years. What, 4 or 5 years, whatever it was? Yeah, it got them Joel Embiid. What has it gotten them ultimately in the end? They win 50 games every year. They're in the second round of the playoffs every year. They never win, right? So you can say, well, that's better than not having that. And true, that is. But if your ultimate goal and the thing that you live by is the only way, and listen to me closely, the only way that you can win a championship, and again, listen to what I'm saying, the only way that you can win a championship is by tanking and dropping dead and letting opponents walk into your building and stomp a mud hole in your ass. If you think that's the only way, you're sorely mistaken. And that's not how anybody believes there. Is it the most prudent way? Yes. Is it the most likely way? Yes. Does it give you a better mathematical chance? Yes. But I will tell you, as I've always told you, the teams that you guys hated that won 35 games a year under Tommy Shepard before they completely ripped it apart, and they didn't completely rip it apart. They didn't, because they kept Kyle Kuzma. They traded for Jordan Poole. They didn't completely, they kept veterans. They've signed veterans, right, for leadership, for minutes, for various reasons to compete, right? You can't develop if you totally suck and you're totally getting annihilated every night. You can't do it. It doesn't work. Okay? But the teams that won 35 games a year, they won 35 games a year the last 2 years to Tommy Shepard because of injuries, not because they were poorly constructed, not because Tommy Shepard didn't have a clue or Ted Leonsis didn't have a clue or the coaching sucked. They only won 35 games in each of those 2 years purely because of injury. Otherwise, they would be in the mid-40s and they would be battling for 6, 7, 8 spot, play-in spot, what have you. And to some of you, that's not good enough. But you know what happens when you're battling for the 6th spot or the 7th spot or the 8th spot or in the playoffs and battling for the playoffs? What happens is if you get one great free agent signing or one really good free agent signing or one great or one really good draft pick, you can automatically vault yourself into the top 3 or 4 of the conference. If you completely tear it apart to the studs, if you completely destroy it, you're much more than one free agent signing or draft pick away from even being competitive. So again, you take that for what it's worth. The Wizards lost last night in overtime, 134-130. Again, I was there. It was a great game. Overtime was fun, awesome, spirited, but they lost. All right, we'll take a timeout. I also got to watch the last 7 minutes and overtime of the Four Nations tournament. Got some thoughts on that. We'll get a couple of final thoughts on the Wizards, and then we'll get into the meat of our show after 1:30 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Out a little wagon wheel to get you going on a Thursday afternoon, the Darius Rucker instrumental version. Old Crow Medicine Show also. We always mention them. They did the original. Actually, I think, did Bob Dylan do an original? An Old Crow Medicine Show covered that? Can't remember. I know OCMS did it. I've seen them live in concert at Eagle Bank Arena, along with the Avett brothers, long time ago. All right, last night at Capital One Arena, the Wizards lose. And listen, again, losing is one thing, right? They don't want to lose. Again, just going to tell you, They don't want to lose. I promise you, they don't want to lose. They are not intentionally trying to lose. They're not good, but they're not intentionally trying to lose. They lost 134-130 in overtime. That's the fourth straight home loss after the three-game winning streak. Again, mentioned the Spurs and Wembanyama on Monday night. Too much Wemby. They lost ultimately by 10. It was the Hawks. That was the second game. That was Saturday night. I watched a bunch of that. Can't believe I forgot that. And then the Cavaliers beat them 134-124 on Friday night. So they've lost four games at home. Friday night, Saturday night, Monday night, Wednesday night. All by varying circumstances. Last night, the problem was too many turnovers. And they blew a 19-point lead. Right? I mean, literally. I didn't stay the whole game. So I was listening to a lot back on the way on 980 to Dave and Glenn Consor. And, you know, listen, they shouldn't have blown such a big lead, obviously. The Pacers got here at like 3:30 in the morning, Wednesday morning, because they played the Knicks in Indiana the night before, and then the snow. They didn't arrive until halfway through the night. And the Pacers played with more energy. Like one sequence and one play, just in particular, that I wanted to point out was Benedict Mathurin at the top of the circle on the wing, and he just blows past Alex Sarr. Now, maybe you say, well, that's going to happen. Yeah, that's going to happen from time to time. But A, I'm not sure if that's the matchup you want. B, I'd like to see a little bit better out of Alex Sarr if that's the matchup I'm going to get. I mean, it's not like Benedict Mathurin, even though he was a number six overall pick, it's not like he's scoring 28 points a game. He's a good scorer, good player. He's not scoring 28 points a game. Okay, so that was disappointing because Sarr then, after getting beat, tried to block it and blocked the wrong side of the basket. It was almost like he was just trying to make an effort to recoup after getting beat at the point of attack. And again, that's fine, but you get the point. Anyway, they lost because too many turnovers and they blew such a big lead, but also because, to be honest with you, like, they missed a couple of free throws early. That wasn't a problem throughout the game, but that ultimately hurt them. And then, again, from a turnover perspective, if you look at it, they had 16 turnovers, right? Which is not a huge number, but the Pacers had 7. The Pacers played an overtime game after traveling, after playing the Knicks the night before. They had 7. Now, they're a good team. But you can't win games when you have more than double the amount of turnovers that your opponent has. Not to mention points off of turnovers and all the other factors that play into a game. And what you'd like to see, is Corey Kispert, who was so good in the first half and early in the third quarter, I don't know if he had another bucket after early in the third quarter. He had 21, I think it was at the half or early third. I don't know if he finished with 21. So I don't think he had another basket. I have to double check exactly when his final basket came, but you'd like to see a little bit more consistency. They drew closer in overtime after being down by 8 or 9, in overtime, because Jordan Poole came up, took a rush three-pointer from 30 feet away, somehow got it to land after it rimmed in and out, went up, down, what have you. They got a little bit fortunate there. But here's another area that they are going to need if they're going to take the next step. Now that you're playing more competitive basketball, certainly the last 7 or 8 games, you won the first quarter again, which, again, has been a major, major problem up until this last 7 or 8 games. They're finally playing a better stretch of basketball from the jump. Again, it's one thing for another team to pull away like the Pacers did, or to pull apart like the Pacers did in the fourth quarter and overtime. It's one thing to do that. That's normal. It's another thing to be uncompetitive from the start. And trust me, they are aware that they were uncompetitive from the start in a bunch of games. They need more out of Bilal Coulibaly, too. I know he had the triple-double last week, Wednesday night in Brooklyn. Last night, 1 of 8. 1 of 8 from the floor. He did have 5 rebounds. He did have 8 assists. He is a good defensive player. He only had 2 turnovers. Was a +3 when he was on the floor. It's not like he's hurting you, but they need more out of Bilal Coulibaly. I mentioned Benedict Mathurin, right? Who, who had that big bucket, as I described, against Alex Saar. He was, the 6th overall pick. Bilal Coulibaly was, I guess he was originally the 8th and then in the trade and whatever. Either way, very similar in terms of draft slotting. Mathurin off the bench last night, 11 of 19, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, only 2 turnovers, plus 28. They need more offensively and more consistency offensively. Again, Kispert was great in the first half and then didn't do much down the stretch, really anything. And Coulibaly, again, just didn't give them anything offensively. He gives them other things, that's great, but didn't give them anything offensively. If they didn't have Jordan Poole, and this is part of his job, 15 of 29, 6 of 15 from 3, including the magic 3-pointer, if you will, in overtime when they were down by, I think it was by 8, to kind of close the gap a little bit. If they didn't have that, then, of course, they wouldn't have been in overtime, right? And they would have just blown the lead in regulation, and they wouldn't have even had a chance ultimately, as they did until, the very last couple of seconds. So, again, I understand they stink. I get it. They've only won 9 games. I'm not trying to tell you that everything's great. They know everything's not great. They know that this is a longer road than they even originally thought. But there is a foundation there, one. They are building some blocks. I don't think they have, and I don't think anybody could make this argument, they don't have a generational superstar. You know what? Neither did Oklahoma City until they made a huge deal for SGA, right? And now they have a generational superstar. You never know what these trades and what these moves are going to yield. You never quite know. Or a draft pick that you weren't even thinking of. As Milwaukee found out, as Denver found out, as other teams have found out, you never, ever know. In the NBA or in other sports. All right, time for a trending alert, and then we will come back and we will get the NFL or the Commanders portion of the schedule and the show started right here, right now on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app. Not the Jets making it official. They have announced that Aaron Rodgers is not going to come back as their quarterback. After 2 years, all the hoopla, the injury on opening night in his very first game, the new head coach Aaron Glenn and general manager Darren Mugi saying in a joint statement that Aaron Rodgers and they are going to part ways. So Rodgers, 41 years old, had a face-to-face meeting with the new brass late last week, and then it leaked out over the weekend that Rodgers was not coming back. So Rodgers will ultimately be a free agent. Where he will wind up will be the interesting part. We'll try and get to that a little bit later on. Meanwhile, the NBA reaching the All-Star break after tonight's action with the All-Star Skills Competition and everything coming up in San Francisco. But a couple more games tonight. The Wizards are obviously done, as we mentioned, losing in overtime to Indiana last night. The Four Nations Hockey Tournament went to overtime last night. Mitch Marner winning it for Team Canada in overtime. A great battle in OT. Tonight, it's Team USA's turn as they take on Finland in opening game action up at Bell Center in Montreal. And that's what's trending. All right, a little chicken fried right here on a Thursday afternoon. Always a good tune. Zach Brown Band is awesome. I think they're at Merriweather Post Pavilion at some point coming up. Thought I saw that. Saw them in concert with Kenny Chesney last Memorial Day weekend at Northwest Stadium. Awesome show. Awesome show. I mean, they performed separately, but on the same show. It was a great night. All right. So anyway, so we'll put the Wizards conversation behind us for today. I just want you to know, again, that there's more than one way to do this. They are not doing it the way you think they're doing it. They are not intentionally trying to lose. I promise you. I talked to enough people, and I know enough about sports and culture and competitiveness. I didn't have to talk to the people that I talked to last night. Trust me, they're not doing it on purpose. Okay? It's actually... I mean, they didn't say this, but the overwhelming sense that I got is, you know, people are surprised that they haven't won more. So, again, like for anybody that thinks they're just intentionally losing games, it's not the way it works. Only in fantasy does it work that way. Trust me. Trust me. The administration and the brain trust there, not trying to intentionally lose games. I mean, it's all I can tell you. Now, whether you believe it or not, that's up to you. But if you want to live in the continuous cesspool, the toilet bowl of thought process like that, then, you know, you could do that. It's free country. You don't have to be smart. You don't have to be reasonable. But you have to understand the way it works and the way it is working. All right, so here's where I wanted to go. The Cleveland Browns have a major, major, major dilemma. The Cleveland Browns are stuck in a situation that you do not want to be stuck in by any stretch of the imagination. Let's first take you to this situation. We all know the disaster they have at quarterback and the disastrous answers or lack of therefore answers that they don't have. Did you realize that they are, according to overthecap.com, more than $31 million over the salary cap. Over the salary cap. Second worst salary cap situation in the NFL. Now, it shouldn't surprise you, considering the albatross that is Deshaun Watson's contract, right? Shouldn't surprise you. Don't forget, they've got, obviously, big money multi-year deals for Myles Garrett, for Denzel Ward, one of their offensive linemen, at least. I'd have to double-check the rest. They got a couple of offensive linemen that they were paying, you know, fairly handsomely, but I'd have to, again, get all the numbers for you. But they have the second worst $31 million over the salary cap. So why am I starting off a show in Washington, D.C. talking about that? Well, that's a great, great question. So here's the deal. Everybody that expects them to just automatically dump Myles Garrett because Myles Garrett wrote a letter and was busy telling anyone and everyone that he wants out of Cleveland forgets about this very reality that, A, the Cleveland Browns would have to want to trade him. One. They've said publicly, again, lots of teams say things and then do the exact opposite. They've said publicly they do not want to trade him. But that's not even the most important caveat. That's not even the most important caveat. The most important caveat is this. For a team that's $31 million over the salary cap, in order to trade Myles Garrett, Do you know how much dead money they would incur if they did it before June 1st, which is kind of like when most teams would have to know, because then they have to figure out a different plan for free agency and the draft and so on and so forth? A trade pre-June 1st designation or occurrence, according to overthecap.com, would cost them in dead money $36 million. Do you know what Myles Garrett's cap number is for this year? $19.722 million. Let me repeat. It would cost in cap dead money the Cleveland Browns, a team that is $31 million over the cap as we speak, reportedly, according to overthecap.com. Again, that is not the official database, so the numbers are always different, but generally, they're in the ballpark. Let's just use it as somewhat accurate, right? Because that's how I approach. I mean, you know, the site is not filled with falsehoods, okay? It might not be the exact number, but you get the point. Let me repeat. Myles Garrett counts just less than $20 million under the salary cap right now in terms of his cap number. In order to trade him pre-June 1st, he would cost $36 million, actually $36.2 million in dead cap money. So that is an additional $16.5 million that Cleveland would have to deal with, okay, from his $20 million cap number now, which is more than reasonable for a Myles Garrett. So again, they would have to take on a $36.2 million dead cap money charge. All right. For a team that's $31 million over. So you do the math here, right? And of course, there's different ways to jimmy things around. And yes, I get it. I understand that. We'll see what happens. I'm not a salary cap expert. Neither are you. But that's a lot of money to absorb in dead cap money when you're $31 million over to start the offseason. Okay? Just keep that in mind. Now, if they trade him after June 1st, which becomes tougher, obviously, there is a dead cap money charge of $14.75 million, in which they save almost $5 million. So if you're with me, boys and girls, logically, right, it would seem like Myles Garrett, unless they get blown away and unless they are Houdini with the salary cap, ain't getting traded anytime soon. And as a matter of fact, probably and most likely isn't getting traded until after June 1st if he gets traded at all. And what this brings me to is maybe he gets traded right before camp. Maybe he gets traded during camp after he holds out. Maybe he gets traded week two after he continues to hold out. Maybe he gets traded after week four after he continues to hold out. Maybe he gets traded right before the trade deadline, or maybe he doesn't get traded at all. And they sit there and have a urination contest with Myles Garrett. Fine. You don't want to play? You don't have to play. You're not going to get paid, and we're going to get some salary cap relief. The point being is, for anybody that is thinking, and I was guilty of it a little bit last week, and I've heard a lot of our shows, for anybody that is thinking that Myles Garrett is automatically coming to the Commanders or even to the Eagles, not so fast, my friend. Not so fast, my friend. Now, there's plenty of other ways to do these things, but that is a huge problem for the Cleveland Browns to get over, even if they wanted to trade Myles Garrett. So because of that, I've arrived. Forget about Myles Garrett. But don't forget about this guy. I'll tell you who this guy is next on the Team 980 in the Odyssey app. All right, wrapping up hour number one. If you want to hop in, 301-230-0980. We opened with the Wizards and the notion, which is ridiculous, that they're tanking on purpose. They're not. And then we just got into the Myles Garrett situation. Again, this is all according to overthecap.com, so if it's wrong, it ain't on me. Okay? I'm just telling you what is available and what everybody in the media uses, and what I can tell you is the Cleveland Browns are reported $31 million over the cap. It would cost a reported $36.2 million in dead cap space to trade Myles Garrett. He currently counts less than $20 million in cap money for the 2025 season. Just because somebody wants to get traded does not mean a team has to, A, grant that, B, decide to not be, quite honestly, some people would call it be a jerk. Others would say protect their asset. And C, use common sense. And what common sense is, if a team is $31 million over the cap, reportedly, not exactly, reportedly, and it costs $36 million in dead cap money, there's a huge gap there that needs to be figured out and filled. And you can't then improve a three-win team, right? If you're going to just make it so that you can clear $65 million worth of cap space to trade Myles Garrett from where you reportedly are now to where you need to be to get under enough so that you can absorb the dead money so that you could get three first-round picks or two first-round picks and a player. That's a lot of maneuvering, boys and girls. It ain't happening before June 1st. Now, there is, as we explained, an opportunity after June 1st. But therefore, I would suggest that the Washington Commanders don't waste a whole lot of time on Myles Garrett, because it is very likely not happening before training camp, if it happens at all. But there is a player that is readily available, that fits the mold, that is a veteran, that is really good at stopping the run, that is a free agent. You don't have to trade anything for him. He is 34 years old. He can still get after the damn quarterback. He's trying to win his first Super Bowl. His name is Khalil Mack. That is who the Commanders should focus on to improve their defensive end slash edge position, their run defense, their pass rush, their leadership, their brotherhood. More details on that and why next. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Khalil Mack is the guy that should be circled at the top of their want list, the top of their wish list. Khalil Mack. More on that coming up. Plus your phone calls, your reaction. You agree, disagree? Let me know. 301-230-0980 on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.